Dr. O, and I'm here for another very, very, very special episode of Dr. O After Dark. As you guys may notice, we are in a different room, different ambiance, and so you know when that happens, we got somebody very special. If you guys don't already know, you should know the one and only Thunderstorm Ortiz. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, man. We're in the green room. We're about to do a concert tonight, so I'm really excited about it, but we had to make time to do this very special podcast.
Well, I thank you so much for making the time to do it. Guys, I know that this is going to be a very inspiring show on tonight, just for all of the craziness that, you know, I've had to get to. First, you know, organically reaching out, and you know, this, he is so humble, so personal. Just as before we were starting, I was talking about, you know, him being a celebrity. He's like, oh, I'm not a celebrity, come on now, you know. But he is so humble, and you know, very responsive. He directly responded, and even though it took a little bit of navigating and some setbacks with, you know, the production team and trying to get, you know, we're able to really get you in, really on a last minute, you know, thing. Then on the way coming from clients being late to the Lyft driver not speaking any English and his GPS going out, to hitting traffic in a 30-minute ride going into an hour and a half.
Like you had a day.
It has been. But with that, I do know that we're here, and it must be meant to be that we are here. So I know this is going to be a very, very, very special episode on this evening.
Let's get into it.
I'm going to have you introduce yourself. But before I do, I'm going to give my introduction of what I know about this young man. First of all, if you're not familiar with him, I do want to say, yes, Thunderstorm is his real biological name on his birth certificate.
Amen to that. That's true.
And he has, that's not it, he has 10 siblings.
Yeah.
And some of them have some very unique names
as well, yeah.
As well, and we're gonna get into that because I know we're gonna have some fun with that. But this young man, he was a finalist on The Voice, season 19, I believe it was.
Season 18.
Season 18, okay.
2020.
Yeah, 2020. And I know that you're very popular there. I think like within the first 3 seconds of you doing your intro song, like they all turned around and gave you the light and, you know, and everything. So that just goes into how wonderful this young man's talent is. He is an artist, comes from a family of artists. If you guys don't know, his father is the one and the only Ron Ortiz, and his mother is the one and only Miss Victoria. Now, let me tell you about these.
I don't like them anymore, man.
Mother was backup singer for many artists, including the one and only Lena Horne.
Yep.
And father was with Motown and Party Day Sessions.
Yeah.
And he was on a help with production things and creating music for a Thriller.
Yeah, you got to be a part of that.
Now, my daughter would have probably fangirled out because she's 11 years old, but she's the hugest Michael Jackson.
You raise her up on the right music, then, man.
You know, ironically, she found it, you know, she got into him herself. One day, you know, she's walking around the house and she's singing, you know, and everything. Like, I'm like, how do you know that song? And this is not Michael Jackson, because you know when you put it on the like the Alexa or whatever, they'll play all the things within that station. So she was singing something like Marvin Gaye or something like that. And I'm like, my Michael Jackson station. I'm like, okay.
You got a Michael Jackson station.
Listen, she is, even though deceased still promises she's going to marry him. even if it's in heaven. And she just told me this year for Halloween she's going to be with
there you go.
So we'll see how that's going to turn out. Which stage is she going to?
I was thinking it.
Is she going to be? Is she going to come out with the fro? Is she going to come out with the curls or the press? You know, we're going to
find out. It's going to be a trick or a treat.
Absolutely. I love that. It's going to be a trick or a treat. So, yes. And brother, Ron Ortiz II, if you don't know about him, where you been? Because you can look him as well. Another really popular and famous artist as well. And I know... going into that with your 10 siblings, you actually started out in a band.
Yeah, we had a family band. All of us played together in a group. You can find some really fun videos on YouTube. Family band. Back when I was wearing an extra large t-shirt with a mohawk, thinking I looked cool. But yeah, we played as a family band. We grew up, and then me and my brother, we became a duo. And we got the tour around.
So forget, here we are talking about like Jackson 5. This was the Artiste 11. So without further ado, you tell us more about who you are. Yes, what are you today?
Well, I think you've covered most of the bases, but yeah, but my name is Thunderstorm Ortiz. Like she said, man, I'm from a family of 11 kids, 6 boys and 5 girls. We learned music from like as early as I can remember. My first memories of music was like laying underneath my dad's grand piano as he was running the scales in the morning, and like just finding peace in that. Music became a form of therapy for me later on in life, and has really helped kind of shape me. Music and God band, and those things kind of separate but also together, have just really shaped the person that I am today. And it brought amazing opportunities. Really thankful for it. I've got to tour around with artists such as Train, Zach Brown Band, Jack Johnson. I got to play with John Legend after being on The Voice, and I played a concert with him in Seattle, which was insane. It's insanity. We still keep in contact today. And
John Legend, you know, come on, Dr. O. Shout out. Thunderstorm said that you will be here.
I can't speak for the man, man. That man is uber talented. Like, you know, even as we are. So, yeah, I've done a lot of those things, and it's been insane. Like, this year, I'm releasing a lot of music I'm really excited about. Starting up a tour that's happening from April to May. There's going to be a lot of the songs, just a solo, more intimate show. And so we're actually here at what's kind of like the first kind of show of that little hybrid tour that's coming together that I'm excited about.
Nice.
But that's a little bit about me. I'm sure we're going to get into a lot more, but I'm excited.
And one of the biggest things I forgot to mention, and I noticed you didn't mention it as well, is that you're born and raised in Hawaii.
Yeah, I am.
You know, so if you're familiar with his dad, and not only his dad's music, you were familiar with his art and doing, I think, like over 900 murals that you have, and the surfboards that he used to, you know, and things like that. So if you're familiar with Ron Ortiz Sr., you would have already known where he is from. But yes, from Hawaii.
Yeah, from Hawaii, man. This little town called Haleiwa on the North Shore of Oahu. I say little town, but man, the people there have such big hearts. And every time I go back, it's just like coming back home. That's exactly what it is. And I miss it there. We're living all the way out in Nashville, Tennessee now. So a little bit farther away from that beautiful ocean and wonderland. But that's where I'm from. My dad, like, he did amazing murals around. I remember helping out with those murals and painting walls and doing music with him. Those are the days that, like, you know, that now me starting my own family and everything. It's like, hey, these are little lessons and things I want to be able to instill in my kids.
Wonderful. So, yes, I'm sure that's probably a huge transition because Hawaii has, number one, even though it is a part of the U.S., it has its own culture.
It does.
And moving from there to landlocked Nashville, which also has its own, very much so, its own culture as well. Yeah. But I can understand or believe that it will be extremely different, especially not being able to get to the water as frequently and as easy. So tell me a little bit about how that, you know, how was it growing up in Hawaii, but also how was that transition now living in Nashville?
Oh man, like there's like, best way I can answer that question is, like, you know, there's so many different ways to kind of do that. I mean, I've been traveling. I didn't start traveling until I didn't start traveling until I was 18 years old. It was the first time I ever left Hawaii. And believe it or not, the first place I went to was Germany for 6 weeks. And, like, it just opened my mind to just there being so much more in my island and the things that I learned there. One thing that is so big in Hawaii is the thing we call Aloha Spirit. It's the fact that we're all connected. We're all family, brothers and friends. It's brother, sister, it's auntie, it's uncle. And those things, you know, they carry you and they guide you. And that's why humility is so important. Never be high on the laws, what we call, which is, like, you know, snobby and all that kind of stuff. It's just remember we all come from the same earth and we all go back to who we die. And so that's what I live by. And but yeah, what's it like living in Nashville, Tennessee? I love being in Nashville because music, man, is my heart and soul. It's it. The blood's just running through my veins. And being around so many talented people, it reminds me of a lesson my dad always talked about. He said, you want to keep yourself humble and you want to keep yourself in a place of growth. Surround yourself with people who are better than you. And it will instill just the hunger to learn. He's like, you know, if the river's always flowing, none of that bad stuff can grow. But when you start to become stagnant, become complacent, that's where all the bad habits start to kind of seep in. And so I need to move somewhere like Nashville where just the heavy rollers and the high hitters and the crazy artists and musicians and songwriters are at. And I'm just like, hey, as long as God got me here, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, you know, Nashville is only a hop, skip, and a jump away from here. So
I'm going to come down here for all the food.
Come down here for all the food, all the fun. You're always welcome. My home is open, you know, to you and your family, which we will get into here here shortly, a little bit more about your family and things. Yeah. But I did want to, you know, throw this out here just a little bit again, since you always mentioned John Legend. I know you're out there with all the heavy hitters in Nashville. So all you heavy hitters, Thunderstorm also said, I heard through the clouds and through the storm, through the crash, I think I heard something come in and say that you would also be here on Dr. Girl, Dr. Dr. College Girl. Find me on all platforms, Dr. Olivia West, on IG, email, my website, etc., etc. So come on, because Thunderstorm vouch for not only you, but also for me.
Let's do it.
Hey, you always gotta throw that shade.
You gotta do it.
Now, so as I said, I wanted to get into your family. Before we get into some of the newest aspects and expansions of your family life, I want to go back to your upbringing, your dad, and one of the things that you honed in on was your, I guess, outside of the band you had with your siblings, when you became more serious with music and things of that nature. And you mentioned just, you know, a while ago how music was therapy for you.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of that happened, or you got more serious after the passing, unsuspected passing of your father.
Yeah, 100%. I would say, like, I wasn't even singing as much until the passing of my dad. I went through a lot of different things. I mean, being one of the things I love when we talk about the show is, like, it's really a lot about just, like, you know, mental health and ability of, you know, dealing with a lot of the hardships and things like that. And I'm sure a lot of you guys can relate. So I went through just a lot of changes in my life as a young kid. I think I was like 13, 14 years old when my dad passed away. And so facing those emotions, but also realizing that my youngest sibling is actually 4 years old. I had this little switch go off of me where it's like, hey, you can't succumb to these emotions that you're feeling. You have to cut those off. And as a kid, those walls and those things that I built up were a protection. It helped me out a lot. But the only place that I found to take those emotions to was music. I started writing, I started singing. My mom started to figure out that I could sing and could write. And it wasn't until my oldest brother, he actually moved to Germany for a year to do his marriage over there. And then I started singing in a family band. And then that's when it just kind of all started to change for me. I started to realize that the perspective that maybe that I went through a lot of pain and turmoil, I was able to speak words or share words that maybe some people were feeling internally but never knew how to put into words. So I realized that that I had something to offer the world. And so that's just why I started writing music. This is why I started performing it. And God has just been kind of favoring that and his stewarding such health in me in that season, and I've been thankful for these opportunities that come.
Wonderful. That's amazing. So let's get into, I'm curious about, because you said that your brother was already in Germany at the time when your father passed away. So that goes.
No, not. He went after, like a year after.
Okay, a year after. That goes into birth order.
Yeah.
You know, it's 11 of you guys, so where do you fall?
I'm number 7.
I'm 10 years older than the eldest. Oh my God. So how was that growing up in a household with 11 siblings? And, you know, your father being an artist, and we know the whole plight of artists a lot of times. You know, we wish there was more funding and support behind that, but I can only imagine, you know, raising 11 kids and making, you know, six figures, you know, or more. I can't imagine, you know, raising 11 kids in a household of 13. That's just,
you know, it's a lot easier than you think.
Okay.
I would say that. I would say it's a lot easier. I would say as well, like, there was tough seasons for sure. I'm not going to lie. I'd say there weren't. But at the same time, it's a lot easier than most people think to have a big family. And in some ways, I think it's actually kind of natural. Like everyone, I mean, I'm 10 years younger than the eldest sibling in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, they stepped in as you know, just people and guardians to kind of help lead and help teach and help cook, help clean. And we did everything we did together. We were a family band. We were more than just a family band. We were a family and we had chores. We had our own family business. We were thriving on the North Shore of Oahu. We were in magazines. We were able to, you know, play around the island. We were able to do a lot of great things. My parents, they're great people, man. I would say with the cards that they were dealt, they did the best they could do to the best of their abilities. And all that aside, I would say, yeah, we did have some hard seasons. But I'm very thankful for those seasons because if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't be half the person that I am today and be able to, you know, no matter how much fame or lack of fame that I acquired, you know, be able to, you know, keep the main thing.
Okay. And that's one of the things that we talk a lot about here, not only on Dr. O After Dark, but also in my practice, is this concept of developmental trauma, or some may say it's complex trauma. Where, you know, I say with developmental trauma is things that have impacted us in during our developmental stages that we often negate as, oh, that was just, you know, part of life. That was just, you know, the Black experience. That was just the Hawaiian experience. That was just, you know, growing up in a household with, you know, 10 siblings and, you know, so on and so forth. But we don't look at or realize how some of these events could have impacted us in a traumatic way, or having, you know, a traumatic response. And so as adults, we're, you know, sitting back and we're struggling with, you know, career, relationships, friendships, et cetera, and not realize that a lot of times it's through that core beliefs that we created through our younger years, developmental stages, especially when things are maybe more positive or safe or structured, and then we have like a traumatic event that changes our worldview. So I'm thinking, as you know, that's why I had to put my family, you know, two-parent household, you own your own business, you know, you had 10 siblings, etc., etc. But I'm then thinking, then your father passed away of a heart attack unexpectedly. You know, and not only is that just the trauma of loss and death, but because it happened suddenly and unexpectedly, may oftentimes change. An example of developmental trauma would be is that I grew up in this safe environment, this family environment where it's safe, and as long as we do what's right, follow, you know, the Hawaiian spirit and follow the lessons that our parents have taught us, it's going to be, everything's going to work out. But then when something shifts that, and, you know, we experience a trauma, and it, you know, it shows us that, well, no, this world, I thought this world was supposed, as long as I did, you know, the straight and narrow, or X, Y, and Z, then everything's supposed to be great. And I've done that, and this event happens, whether it's sudden, you know, sudden death, whether it's, you know, being walking down the street and being robbed, you know, and it's like, well, I did all the stuff that I was supposed to do. So tell me.
I did X, Y, and Z, like I should have this, or my life should look this way. I would say, you know, I look at life with a very unique perspective. I look at it in a way that, like, I'm not owed anything. I'm not owed anything from anybody. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if there's respect there, like, I want to earn that respect. I want to win that respect. Like, whatever show that kind of looks like, whatever. You know, I would say, yeah, there's a lot of great aspects to my upbringing, a lot of things. I would say even some of my siblings, we took on the trauma and the response to that trauma very differently. And I would say the way that I looked at it was, that's a season that happened in my life. I do know there's a lot of healing and work that can be done. But I'm also a firm believer that there becomes a time to where you can be oppressed by that trauma. But at the same time, you start to become the oppressor on yourself that's keeping you in place where you can never go past. It's almost like the people, it's like the things, like the best example I can come up with is I have a lot of friends always tell me, I can't sing, like I can't go over tune. I'm like, where did that start? Who's the first person to tell you couldn't sing? They're like, man, some lady in choir, like when I was in elementary or whatever. I'm like, where is she now? Like, I haven't seen her in however long. I'm like, exactly. So you're the one speaking this lie with yourself. You're the one speaking this thing with yourself. And sometimes I explain trauma that way in my life. Is that, like, you know, there comes a part where you have to just own up to it and say, hey, this was my life. This is what happened. What am I going to make of it? And when you start to do that, man, the possibilities are endless. Not just that, I work in a lot of organizations sometimes, like a part of churches with youth. I've done mission trips in Brazil, Mexico, the Philippines. Like, I've done a lot of work here in the U.S. as well. And I think because of my perspective and the hardships that I've been through, like, as a Christian, I believe that God doesn't cause the bad things that happen, but he can redeem something great and allow it. And so because of my circumstances, because of my experiences, I've been gifted with a unique perspective to be able to recognize when someone's going through something similar or different and to be able to speak into that because of my experience. So I would say, you know, I did a lot of growing up. Being a kid that's 14 years old, that's just not the time to be a parent. And if you've ever been through something like that, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to give into the world of darkness that's around you, that has devices and things that are telling you that, you know what, it'd be just easy. Just numb it. Don't feel the pain. Don't feel the joy. Don't feel whatever. And I had to learn at an early age, man, just like, if I let those things consume me, I would no longer be able to be the person that I need to be. And I'm thankful for the people in my life that have helped to contribute to who I am today. Because who I am today is the work of the village. That's what I could say. Who I am today, man, is the work of me, people who have come along and spoken to my life in times that I didn't even want them to. Like, I didn't think I even needed to. I wasn't even listening. But they planted seeds, and people came along and they watered that wild home. And I'm the person now that's hopefully giving back to the world, and hopefully gonna give my kids something better than what I have.
Wow, and you know, you said a lot of things, wonderful things I want to touch on. First of all, thinking back just at, you know, what you've, you know, number one, your mindset, you know, behind it all. And as you mentioned, that, you know, therapy for you was going into the music. And I love that because I often use a lot of music in, absolutely. And, you know, in my practice and things like that, right? No, Dr. O, quick to bust out in song, you know, quick to be like, you know, we are quick to be like, you should be a DJ. You just always coming up with, you know, some. But, you know, music is, you know, a part of us. You said, you know, next, that the way that you and your siblings dealt with it has been different. And I can imagine the difference between being a four-year-old and not really having a life with being growth with your father, to basically being a 24-year-old. And being an adult and, you know, going out onto your own and things of that nature, like your brother. And I commend even where you're at, and the success that you've made and how you navigated your way through, because you're absolutely right. You know, having lost at, you know, any age is very, you know, very different, very detrimental. But when you're, you know, in that, especially in that pivotal moment, that preteen and teenage kind of phase, it, I believe, can be very, a lot more challenging. My mother, she passed away when I was 20, and my brother, who's 9 years younger than me, was 12. So we have a little bit of, you know, kind of that understanding a little bit, even though he was a little bit older than what, than what he was. But because of our age difference and the difference between you and your older brother, we both was kind of along that same route, with you being 14 and your older brother being 24, my younger brother being 12 and me being, you know, being 20. So, and when I look at where you are, and shout out to my brother, Jay, love you, but, and where he is, and a lot of that is known because of, you know, the trauma and things of that nature of losing his mother, you know, at 12 years old, and some of the experiences he's had after that. And it's, you know, it's just three of us. So my sister, she's 2 years older than me. So it's my older sister, myself, and then my younger brother. So by this time, he was pretty much the only child, you know, in the household. He had, I was in the military by this time. My sister was living, you know, with me. We would all cross the country. I, by the way, grew up in Seattle. Heard you say that. That's where you did concert and things with John Legend. So, you know, they were still basically like in Seattle. We're all the way down here in Florida. And so he did not have that support and things of that nature that, you know, you had from, you know, still having all of your other siblings in the household. But I can also imagine, because your brother, your oldest brother, and the older ones are there, you know, going out into the world or already out in the world.
Yeah.
And so you may have been put into the position to also have to step up to your younger siblings at 14 and being that father figure.
Yeah, I would say, like, there was a lot of growing up, a lot really fast. And you kind of really, I mean, at that age, like, most teenagers, preteens, like, you know, you just give up. You just kind of like, you don't want to do anything about any consequences. Because of my experience, like, I learned that consequences are, they're important. And someone's always watching, and someone's always going to repeat what we're doing. That was a big one for me, because it's like, you know, I can navigate and I control what I do, but, like, when I have to think about the repercussions, it's like, there's some places that I can go, but I know that my younger siblings can't go there with me. And the same thing with my giving into certain vices and certain things you might be able to handle, but your loved ones can't handle the same thing. You might not be able to control how much pain that causes the people that you love. And so, like, learning those things at a young age was such an important thing for me, because I care so much about the people that I love. Like, they're everything. I was talking to my wife about this. Like, there's very, like, my tight-knit community, my circles, it's very small. I have a lot of friends, but I have very few family that are in a tight circle. And I care so much about those people. And so that, you know, my siblings watching, you know, as a young preteen, like, growing up with all this stuff, and, you know, hot-headed, like, I was hot-headed as a kid. Just ready to fight at the drop of a hat. But I had to learn, like, you know, what are the repercussions of those actions? Like, what's that going to do to my mom? What's that going to do to my siblings? What example am I setting for my brother? And, like, you know, I wouldn't say I had to step in as a father figure. I would say that, you know, but I did step in as, you know, as a little brother. I learned that man. And I'm really thankful for that experience, because I've seen life through different lens. Yeah, I would say, man, you can look at everything in two ways, negative or positive. And I choose the positive, because, you know, it's so much easier to sit in the negativity. The positivity is like a choice. And it's not because you haven't experienced the negative. There's two sides to my entire story, but there's a part that I'm definitely, because of my experiences and things that I've seen now, that I can share. And there's a lot of hardship that I've been through that I'm just like, you know what? Like, that's not what I want to be about anymore. And because of that, like, I've been able to shape an entire different world.
and be able to take a lot of that out in your music.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to the lyrics, man. You hear something.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, before we get into that, I want to say, you know, it's funny. I found it funny as you were saying, oh, I'm from a small, tight-knit community. I'm like, how many of y'all know people with 10 siblings? How small is a family of, you know, having 10 siblings? But, you know, what you also kind of touched on, and I was laughing about, is when you were telling your story about your friend who told them that, you know, they couldn't sing. And I'm over here like, my mama, my sister, the choir director that was like, you know, just lip it in. You know, and then as I got older, the recordings of my own
yeah.
and my own voice, I was like, you know, a lot of people told me I can't sing, but now you know,
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. I mean, if you heard me as a little teenager, like, trying to sing, my favorite story about it is, like, I really wanted to start singing. I set up a stage in my front yard, and I just played to the open air, like, every afternoon in between work and chores. Like, my neighbor came over after, like, a month or so. It's just like, you know, when you first started singing, I was like, Thunder's a talented man, but singing's something he shouldn't be doing. He's like, well, then you got better and better with each day. He's like, you know, and then now, like, I really look forward to listening and I enjoy it. Like, all that to say is that, like, I'm a firm believer that, like, there's some people that have a natural talent, and it's a given. But at the same thing, it's like, you can be a big bone person, the most potential in life, but, like, that person that goes into the gym and goes into work every single day, they're just gonna, their capability and their talent is just gonna rise above. So all that to say is that, like, I do believe that everyone can sing. I think sometimes the hard part is that most of us want to sound like someone else. We have an image in our mind of what we want to sound like.
Hey,
I sound like Donny Hathaway and Stevie Wonder, man. I'll be happy. Or even Michael Jackson. I'll be happy. But you know what? The words are dang for you. Like, you got, there's only one me. There's only one you. You got to find what that voice is that's a reflection of who you are. And then learn how to use that.
And what I hear most of all is that it's not this, what we often get into, this microwave industry. You started out literally making a stage, and it took every day, you said, even when people was, you know, saying, oh, shut that racket up, or whatever the case may be, you still had that dedication. And I think with a lot of us, we're not maybe as passionate about something we say that we are. Like, I used to want to be a singer when I was, you know, younger, but outside of, you know, maybe singing in, you know, random songs here and there in church choir, you know, I wasn't like, I wasn't outside creating stages and, you know, performing and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But we see that, I see that a lot, especially as part of the culture here in Atlanta. You know, when I first moved here, everybody was either a rapper or a producer. And I was just joking with somebody the other day, because now more of the movie industry, and we're considered as a Black Hollywood now, and now everybody is an actor or an actress. But the point is, it was like they were saying a name and the label, I'm this, I'm that. And it really wasn't, you know, that at all. But part of it was because they did not want to put in the hard work and dedication.
You have to put in the hard work. Like, you know, I would say this too. It's like, I see, like, who I am is now a singer. Like, I'm Thunderstar, Kai, Healy, Ronnie, Ortiz. Like, that's who I am. Being able to do things like this is a gift, something that I really enjoy. Being able to sing and be able to do music is something that I work extremely hard at. And it's a lot of things you do when there is no spotlight. It's a lot of things you do when you're not on a stage. It's a lot of things you do. Like, I'm my own worst critic. Like, most of the times I can't even listen to myself. I hear all my own mistakes. All the things I want to go and work on. Like, and that's the mindset that, like, I have to cultivate to become, like, as little as in my spectrum of things as successful as what I'm able to do so far. So I would say, like, you know, you're going to have those times where, like, if you're a singer, you're an actor, you're an actress, like, or, like, you're gonna start a business, the business is gonna fail, you're gonna feel like you wanna burn it all to the ground. But it's literally waking up, being a goldfish, taking from Ted Lasso, you know, forgetting those things and and stepping up back to the plate and saying that, like, you know, I'm going to do better tomorrow. Like, I'm going to keep showing up. And you keep showing up, man, you're going to see an outcome, because it's like
creating good habits.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like you got to keep doing it. You got to put in a certain amount of hours. You don't put in those hours when no one's watching. It ain't fun all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, hey, fun don't pay the bills.
That's a 21-90-year-old.
It's like you gotta stand, you gotta put the work in, you gotta surround yourself once again with people who are better than you, people who are honest with you, who will tell you, bro, that sounds like, you know, I don't know what kind of podcast this is, so I'm just gonna say it.
It's after dark. I'm more worried about the Christian faith and population and things of that nature. As long as, you know, they ain't got a problem with it, you know,
I'm an honest man.
Okay, well, on that note, let's go ahead. Y'all know how we do right here. It's always
honesty, man. Like, I think that's a core part of Christianity and what I've learned. It's honesty and transparency. And so I would say, man, like, you know, you don't want people around you telling you the best thing that ever happened in the world. You don't want people around you telling you the best thing. You want people around you telling you the best podcast in the world.
Absolutely.
Like, you want to have people around you that not just going to push you down, because there's a difference of criticizing and pushing you down than like a positive lifting up and elevating and saying, hey, this is how I see how you can elevate this. Or, hey, like you did this right. Like, I'm praising you for the good things, but at the same time, being real with you. Because I tell you, man, like, when you're buzzing, like, I mean, like, there was a moment I was buzzing on national TV on The Voice, and it was crazy. It was awesome. I can't tell you how many people called me that I hadn't heard from in a long time. All people called me like, hey, you remember me? I used to stop by your house and you play music. Like, I don't mind that. But I'm just like, you know, when you have those moments, everyone wants to be around you. When those moments are gone and someone else is having a moment, you start to realize who your family is. So I would say surround yourself with just good people. We're going to push you. And you got to push yourself harder, man. If you don't have a fire underneath your ass, like, you ain't going to do nothing.
And I think that, you know, first of all, y'all say for me three times real fast his full name. Because I got Thunderstorm
Saihakili Marani Ortiz.
Thunderstorm Saihakili Marani Ortiz. We got Thunderstorm.
That's close enough.
Thunderstorm Ortiz, that's what we going with, because the middle names.
It's like 49 characters, man. It's in there.
You know, when you spit that out, I was like, say that again. Try saying that three times.
Thunderstorm Ortiz, I'm like, that's a long name. Like, what do you hear the full thing? It don't even fit on most of the form. But that's how we do it. But it has a special name. Thankful for it. But yeah, man, like, I would say it's important to get back to the main thing. Traumas are real. Mental health is real. I mean, most men, like, we step into this world and we think about what we can offer and what we don't offer. And that's how we kind of gauge our value to the people around us and love us and who we are. The reason why I said earlier is, like, I sing, but I'm not a singer. Because I'm not what I offer. You so much more, and realize that, guys, like, because we all have peaks and valleys. We have times where you were selling at your business and you're crushing it. You got times where you're looking at your bank account and it's almost like a refrigerator where you think food's gonna magically appear there one day. You know what I mean? Like, we have those moments, but we're not those moments. Those moments are seasons. So just make sure you don't beat yourself up too much if you're going through work.
Well, that's wonderful. And we will take that. And, you know, that goes back into, you know, as I said, I think that, you know, in this generation, a lot of times I would say kind of post Justin Bieber and, you know, social media kind of phase, you know, shout out to Justin Bieber, come on over here, Dr. O, you know how we do as well.
I don't know him yet.
But I remember, so my son, he's 23, and I remember he loves to sing, beautiful, amazing voice, loves to sing, loves to rap, write music, the whole nine. But when Justin Bieber came out, you know, the way that he was discovered by doing the YouTubes and, you know, now all of a sudden he's famous. A lot of people begin to think, oh, it's just that easy. Let me create and I'm gonna go viral. I'm gonna go this, I'm gonna go that on, you know, social media or even to like the platform that you're on with The Voice. Oh, I'm gonna just go on and do this and then I'll blow up, not knowing and understanding that no, your journey started way earlier. then just, you know, the voice, but people don't see that journey. They just think is, oh, you went on, you won, and you blew up. So tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you end up on The Voice and your journey? Was that back in Hawaii that you auditioned?
So my story with that's a little different. Let me start by saying this. It's kind of like what she said. You never know what the backstory is. You never know, all the work that it takes for something to happen. Backtrack how I actually even ended up on The Voice in the first place. I was sitting in my home playing a video game. That's something I love to do in my off time. I beat the video game, but then I realized I absolutely did not accomplish anything in life. So I grabbed all my music stuff, went down to my friend's ice cream store, I sat up on the street, and I started sharing all my new songs. And that's one of the things I used to do, and I still will do every once in a while. So when I have new songs that I want to share, I want to see what those responses are. Don't even know who I am. Are they going to stop? Are they going to listen or not? And I would just go out there and sing to the opening. It's something I actually enjoy to do. It's terrifying, but it's fun. And so this one gentleman was walking by, and he kind of just stood there and started listening with him, his wife, and his kid. I mean, actually wasn't his wife at the time. And they listened for about an hour. So I was like, I need to stop and talk to these people because they've taken the time to listen to me for a long time. So I stopped and chatted with them. This guy turned out to be his main name, John Chu. He was a movie director for this movie called In the Heights, Crazy Rich Asians. And he's coming out pretty soon. It's called Wicked.
Okay.
And he asked me to come out for his wedding and write the song for his first dance and to perform for his wedding. And so I did that. Unbeknownst to me, he reached out to The Voice casting department and said, hey, I have this artist that you need to meet. You need to have your show. And so then I was on tour and I met a lot of people. I didn't meet Justin Bieber, but I met his manager at that point, Billy Brown, which is really cool. So then I was on tour, got an email from The Voice saying, hey, someone recommended you to be on the show. We'd love for you to come do an audition. So, long story short, I was like, you know what? I'm in the season of saying yes, because my family, we weren't about music competitions. Because, how could you get Bob Marley and Michael Jackson on a stage and say which one more impactful? It's just impossible. So I was like, but I'm in a year of saying yes. I'm just saying yes to whatever door they kind of open. So I'm going to walk through it. And if God doesn't want that to happen, I'm just going to close that door. And so I stepped into The Voice, not expecting much from it. Not even expecting to get a chair turn in the final audition. I mean, just me and my acoustic guitar, the talent, the uber talent that was around me. But what happened, and it was insane. But all that to say that if I didn't get up off my little tush and get out there and play to the open air, no one else was watching the camera, that opportunity never would have missed it inside.
And saying yes.
Yeah, sometimes yes, man. You got to say yes. You know, you got to pick the right moments to say yes. Because if you say yes all the time, I will say this. Yeses are valuable, so learn the importance of a no. But find seasons in your life where you say, hey, I'm going to say yes to whatever comes. I'm going to step through that door, and I'm going to take a chance on myself because I deserve that.
And I believe that no matter what your religious or spiritual background is, when you humble yourself to a higher power, then he will lead you and guide you. And I believe that had to be nothing but God. And I believe that in your, you know, just hearing your faith that you speak about alone, that, you know, you were out doing what you do, singing in the open air after, you know, winning a video game, but realizing you haven't done anything, you know, with the day, knowledge is today, my whole life, and going out there and doing it and being discovered right then. Now, I will say, I was like, if you didn't know what Adam looked like, you know, we have a bigger issue. Because I was like, Adam, was it Adam? Was it Adam that came out that was on it?
Oh, no, I would have saw him a mile away. It's just like, you know, it's You got to find the right season. Just to humble yourself. Humble yourself and listen. As a Christian, my parents just always say, God's always speaking. God's always talking. We just always listening. Sometimes we got our ears shut. Sometimes we are got head banging music on. We're asking God to speak to us, but we can't hear him through all the noise that we got around us. So, you just gotta learn how to silence those things. You gotta learn how to hear your voice and that other voice that we don't want to talk about, and the voice of the Lord speaking to you. I don't know if you're all Christians, but that's just something that I believe. It's like, it's the more that you spend your time close to something, you'll be able to recognize what's real and stuff.
And I believe that is, you know, again, regardless of you're a Christian or whatever your spiritual or higher power or belief is, when you humble yourself and you open up to that, whether it's the voice of God or Allah or, you know, multiple, you know, gods or the, you know, our ancestors, whatever it is, if you are open to that and not on this high pedestal of I know it all and can't nobody, you know, teach me nothing and
that's,
tell
that's
me nothing.
That's where fools stand, man. I tell you that. It's like, never think you know it all, man. The moment you think you know everything, that's a new life. So, it's better humble your pride, I tell you. And it's the same thing. It's only by pride comes contention. When you allow yourself to be bothered by things, you allow yourself to allow pride to overcome you. Like, the people around you aren't going to be around you, love you, and you can get something from you. So it's just like, it's not a life I want to lead. It's not a life I desire.
So for those who, most of us should be privy to knowing what the voice is, for those who are not, you know, it's of the likes of, it's, as you mentioned, it's a music competition of the likes of American Idol, Star Search, if you're about my age, and Apollo, you know, all of those things. So I'm knowing that you're from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Knowing that you now live in Nashville, having your guitar here, you guys sit here a little bit over there, and knowing that it in a contest such as The Voice, it's not your own original music. You're doing a cover and covers of different things. And from what I watched, you did a wide variety of genres from. Not only for everybody, I remember like the Beatles and, you know, so on and so forth. And everything from pop to neo soul, R&B, hip hop, country. And so it was just, you know, having this conversation earlier. How do you describe your genre of music?
First off, I would say my genre of music is it's not black, it's
in its own lane.
In my own lane, but at the same time, I need to get a little bit more literal. I would say it's a cross of singer, songwriter, soul, R&B, pop now especially. It's kind of really started to blossom more than pop ballad and stuff. But the reason why I say it's me, because I grew up in a family to where my father had a lesson and said you couldn't say you didn't like a genre of music unless you play it or you understood it. So we learned to play pretty much every genre under the sun, and the ones that we didn't know we could study. And just learn from it, listen to. I mean, we listen to K-pop, we listen to, you know what I mean? We listen to folk music, we listen to polka, I listen to James Taylor, John Denver, Paul and Simon, I listen to Miles Davis, John Coltrane, music, I listen to Thelonious Monk, like, I listen to, like, Howlin' Wolf, Buddy Guy, like, you know, like, all these different genres of music, and, like, that's what I grew up on. And so, as naturally as I began to write, I started to learn that each genre allowed me to showcase a different part of who I was. But then when you started to mix those genres a little bit, you start to find something even more special. And so that's why a lot of my songs have hints of a lot of different flavors. Like, it might sound folky, like a singer-songwriter stuff, but it's like, there's some soul in that voice. What's going on? And so
definitely some soul.
That's what I love to do. I love to write music. It's insane that with 8 notes in the scale, the amount, a sheer amount of infinite combinations and melodic structures that you can find to create music, it's mind-baffling. And when you get another writer in the room, you write something you never thought you'd ever write. It's insane. It's insane.
And I ask you that because I know earlier I was saying how, you know, I would have coined it as country. You're like, country, really? I've never gotten that before. But no, you know, it is, but it also is, it has that soul to it as well. And when I think of artists like Jelly Roll, and when I heard his first song, I was like, who is this? Let me look him up. And was surprised to see white man with tattoos on his face. I was like, oh no, that has to be, no, he has to be a brother. And I was thinking that, no, this has to be like folky music, pop or whatever. And it's, you know, he identified, you know, as country and you know, and things of that nature. I think you're, you know, you're right when it says it's that blend of, you know, a lot of genres. So speaking of what you're taking away from what your father taught you, is there a genre that you don't like?
That's a good question. Is it genre that I don't like? No, I just don't like music I can't feel. That's the best way. Like everyone knows, like if you live in Nashville, you know the number system. You know, like the mathematical equation that comes behind making music. Like anyone can get in the studio and just throw some auto-tune and just do something that's just numb into your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't stand that stuff. I'm like, I wouldn't say there's a genre that I don't like. There's artists, there is songs that I don't like. But that genre is, it's country. Like you just said, like Jelly Roll and country. I mean, you got guys like Johnny Cash, man. Like, listen to the storytelling, look at the way that they structure things, and I'm just like, wow, like, make me weep. And then there's some country out there that I'm just like, dude, turn that off. That's just noise. That's just noise. I can find you 150 songs that sound just like that, and that's just you're stealing from this guy, stealing from that guy. Like, I'm just like, I'm not going for that. It's not original. So if you're original and you got heart, you sing about something that matters.
And I really like that. I never thought of it, you know, from that way before, of you liking, you know, best describing that, liking music that you can feel. I would feel that because I'm an eclectic with music. I love all genres of music, you know, not just the R&B, hip hop and things of that nature of being African American, but even early on, you know, I started getting into country and things of that nature when I, ironically, you know, being from Seattle, a lot of people might think, you know, I was a little bit more diverse at, no, but we was all West Coast at the time, Tupac, Shakur, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, you know, the whole nine. But when I moved to Florida and I was stationed in Pensacola, and in Pensacola, they used to do like these free concerts and everything on the beach. Baby, Taylor Dane came and did a free concert. That was my first introduction to country music, and I fell in love. After Taylor Dane, Shania came.
Oh, there you go.
When I tell you, now we talk about when y'all go in and y'all doing SWV and Whitney Houston and everything else on a karaoke night, baby. Pull me over on an old body way, get off the phone, get the dog
she
a bone.
About she can't
hey,
say it,
hey, hey, honey, I'm home. That's the only thing I maybe I should go in the country.
It's insanity. Like music, man. Music is something that I don't think we understand. Like that's my perspective on like I know that music is more like, I mean, the best way I can explain it is, I mean, you're a writer and you're writing music, right? You ever get a song in your dream, right? And if you don't wake up and you put pen to paper like in that moment, like you try to repeat that what you heard, like you'll never be able to get it. You'll never be able to get that feeling. Because sometimes music is an opportunity. It's just like opportunities. It's flying by. If you don't grab it right in that moment, you'll never get that back. Some of us are just gifted and blessed with the opportunity to be able to take that and to turn it into something. And so I know that, like, and I think any artist who, you know, knows what they're talking about, the music is something so much more than us. And something so special that's really connected to just the inner workings of this world. It's the reason why, like, it surpasses language barriers.
Absolutely.
There's people that, I mean, there's songs that I listen to that sometimes I don't even know what they're saying. And I'm just like, bro, I vibe with that.
You know, I was so amazed the first time I went to Paris.
Wow.
And went to a club and nobody in there speaks no kind of English, you know, and they're just like us here Americans, where they're very particular on learning their language and everything. Like they're not going to compromise you, you know.
French ain't going to compromise.
You better get it. But the entire club, until somebody put a smoke bomb out and we all had to run out. But before then, the entire club, white, black, everybody, none of them speak English. Probably me and, you know, my partner, what was with at the time, the only ones that spoke English, but the music, and they dancing, and they and they singing along in English, all the lyrics. And he's like, you know, they don't know nothing they're saying. You you know, but it does, you know, as you mentioned, cross barriers. Because if you can feel it.
Yeah.
And it goes down. Now, I don't know when you cut yourself off where you were going to go into, but as you were saying that, I want to put another shameless plug in. All of my country singers, producers, y'all holler at your girl, because I know, just like in mental health, that is a slightly tapped in genre and industry with some of us. There's only about maybe less than a handful.
There's more than you think.
No, there's more, but I said that is widely known of. Yes, that, you know, that is widely known of. And I would say, even in that, besides the new girl, there's a new girl group that's, I forget their name, but you know, I seen that they're sisters.
Then you got Queen B, who just dropped a country song.
Oh yeah, no,
I don't know.
I mean, she Texas, so.
I'm just saying, music is so much more than many people now. You want to make it, I mean, you're in Nashville, like, you got the fancy studios, which is cool. All my music is done at someone's house. I'll tell you, like, everyone's got home studios that are just, like, amazing.
Wow.
So what I would say is, like music is so obtainable. There's ever a time when you've got no excuse to make music. Right now is that time. And you got social media that's going to have blasted everywhere. I mean, the same with your podcast and what I do and what's people like. Start this concert for a second.
Yes, I'm trying to be mindful of the time.
But yeah, so I'll just say, like, you know, don't make no excuses. Just get out there, make it happen, and be surprised at what you're coming up with.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that country single coming out.
Listen, it's going to come, because I'm looking for the invite to be at somebody's house going down. Because y'all know, follow me on Dr. After Dark. Y'all heard me drop some balls a couple of times, and now we're going to add some country on up into that mix as well. Absolutely.
Well, my house is pretty chill nowadays. It's getting ready for baby number two. So.
So as we get ready to end, because I know you have to be mindful that you're getting ready to get out
here.
Yeah,
I'm supposed to be on stage in like 6 minutes. So I gotta go. But
congratulations. I said newlyweds, but you have to come back on and tell us, you know, about the story of you and your wife. It's been 4 years now.
Yeah.
You have a 19-month-old son.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she's pregnant.
Yeah, we're pregnant with another boy. We're born parents, the donut man, 7 inches next chapter. We're excited. Come September, we'll have another kid. And we're excited about it. It's the best thing. The kids are the best thing this world could ever be.
So, Early September. Libra in the house. Libra in the house. We're going to shoot for October. Now, that means that
No. So Libra is at Virgo.
Oh, yes. Why am I thinking November? That's my daughter. Thank you, Virgo. So late September.
Because end of August until the beginning of September.
Yeah, about 23rd, 24th of September is when Libra picks up.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm shooting for. A late September baby. So that we can have.
We don't want to be too late. My wife's going to kill me.
Another Libra in house. But it sounds like it was just, if I do the math, if I just, you know, newly conceived between December-ish, like a New Year's Day surprise.
We don't know. New Year's. Thankful.
Now, is this a new announcement?
No. We just did our gender reveal on Instagram like 2 days ago. So we're like, really excited, but I do have to go because I got 5 minutes.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations on all of your success. We do have to do it again and continue everything. Thank you so much once again for joining us on Black Girl After Dark. Y'all make sure that you check out Thunderstorm RTs and tell them where can they find you.
Well, first off, I think I'm the only guy out there who's Thunderstorm. You can find me pretty much everywhere underneath that. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you know, Spotify. Like, we got a new song out that's going really well right now that we're really excited about. It's called Don't Let Me Let You Go. I'm going to be playing that tonight as well. But please, go out there, stream the music, support. Let's have a good old time.
Well, wonderful. And hopefully I might be able to get a couple of shots and add it in, you know, to some of, to some of you performing and everything. So I will let you go.
Let me do this thing real quick before I get in trouble.
Thank you all so much for, and I'll do that. So we'll have your legs standing up.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're fine.
Let me do this thing real quick.
No, absolutely. I know you have to, you know, get out and go.
Thank you.
And again,
honestly,
I want to, you know, make sure we stay in contact.
Well, you got me now.
So, and once again, directly.
That's easy. I run all my own stuff right now, so it's good. I'm using all my stuff.